Welcome to the Feel Good Weddings podcast by Polka Dot Wedding. My name is Dorothy, otherwise known as Miss Polka Dot, and I'm the founder and editor of Polka Dot Wedding. I have run my own business for 15 years, and I am passionate about the ins and outs and the ups and downs of surviving the small business world. Our business-focused episodes are for you, as a wedding vendor, to learn and to get more than a little bit inspired. The Polka Dot Wedding team is honoured to conduct our work on the land of the Boonwurrung, Woi Wurrung, Eora and Kurungi people. We honour the traditional Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander custodians of the land, and we pay our respects to elders past and present. I am really hoping today's guest won't be disappointed if I call her a firecracker, because when I think of her, that's what comes to mind. She has colour and life and beauty in everything that she does, but she also has this way of balancing that with really deep subjects and advocacy and talking about what is important to her and what she values and managing to reflect that in everything that she does. Today, I want you to meet Zee Scott. She is a Melbourne-based wedding cake designer and celebrant, also used to do catering, also does emceeing. I love Zee's approach to the way that she runs her business and her approach, of course, and love of colour. So I wanted to dive in a bit beyond the wedding stuff, a bit beyond the pretty stuff, into how she's managing to run a wedding business in 2023 and how she finds her feet within that to be able to hold tight to her values but still do this beautiful work that is so popular and so loved. And I also wanted to dive in because Zee has barely slept more than 4 hours for the past I don't know how many years. And she's always up at 3 a.m. trying to juggle all this around motherhood and around weddings. And I find that really fascinating. So I wanted to dive into it. I'm really looking forward to this chat with Zee, and I'm looking forward to see what you think. Zee, I am so thrilled to have you because I've wanted to do this chat for so long. Thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I've been very excited since we agreed and booked it in.
I'm really looking forward to it. So tell me all about you, first off, to kick us off.
Oh, I don't even know where to begin. I'm the kind of person, I don't know, if I had to have like an elevator pitch, I'd be like crazy woman who doesn't like to sleep but loves to have amazing ideas that she always starts but probably never finishes.
I feel like that describes a business owner in general though, doesn't it?
Just with anything in life, even walking around my house, my partner's just like, can you just finish that thing that you started? And I'm like, yeah, I'll get to it. I've got to be in the right mind for it.
one day. Yeah. You've got time. So I did this in my intro, but you do cakes, you do celebrancy, you do emceeing, and you used to do catering, though I just saw that I feel like you're pulling back on catering now, aren't you?
Yeah, just a touch. As you move through business, there's always at a point where you go, what am I not really enjoying anymore? And I love cooking, absolutely love cooking. But what was happening was I was focusing so much on cooking for my clients that I stopped cooking at home. And we went through a bout there where we were just having so many takeaways that we were just like, okay, you know, and it's not just me who cooks at home. My partner cooks as well. He's very good in the kitchen. But yeah, I just sort of went, nah, I'm not enjoying that anymore. So we'll just release it.
Cakes and celebrancy and emceeing is enough, let's be real.
Plenty.
It's plenty. So let's wind back the clock and talk about how did you get started in the wedding world and which came first out of catering, cakes and celebrancy, the triple C's?
So cakes actually came first. So cakes came many, many moons ago. My mum used to teach royal icing back in the, it was probably 80s. mid-80s, early 90s with Wilton. And so that sort of passion for sort of baking and stuff came from that end. And I used to follow around the kitchen all the time and be extremely annoying and try and get her recipes and try and learn as much as I can. I used to be an actor. I always felt that I needed like a backup career or something. So I said to my mum one day, well, I'm going to start making cakes and I'm going to start my own catering business. And she was like, yeah, okay, all right, let's see you do that. And I did that, and that was fun. It was a nice little side hustle in between auditions and things like that. And then, so that kind of took off. But then about 3 years later, my best friend who's from Australia was like, oh, I'm going back to Australia for a bit. And we used to work on a cabaret show that toured. And she said, why don't you come with me? Because it's your last year to get a working holiday visa. And I was like, yeah, sure, I'll do that, you know. And I moved here and I left all my businesses and work and everything at home. And then midway through that working holiday year, I met my now partner. And then by the end of the year, I was like, well, if I'm going to stay here, I'm going to need to work out what I want to do. And so I started up my cake and catering business here. That was in November of 2011. And then shortly after, a few months later, we attended a wedding. So a few years later, we attended a wedding, and it was the most boring wedding for two people who were not boring at all. And the ceremony was just like this guy. I mean, I've not seen him in the celebrant world since. So I'm hoping that, like, I, you know, I don't bop into him one
don't
day.
Don't
he's the reason. Yeah. But yeah, he just had, he did the ceremony. Every time he said their names, he looked back at his paperwork. It was almost like he was making sure that he got their names right. Like he'd done like four ceremonies that day and was worried about saying the wrong name. So I was like, during the ceremony, I looked at my partner and I'm like, what's that job? And he was like, it's a celebrant. And I was like, what's a celebrant like? And he said, oh, they just marry people. And I was like, oh yeah, I want to do that job. And by the time we got home and he went to bed, and I just had this like spark, and I was like, oh, I just want to do that job. Like, how do I get to do that job? And I researched, and by midnight, I think, no, by 1 a.m., I think it was, I had booked myself onto the marriage celebrants course to do my course online, and decided that's, yeah, that's what I wanted to do. And 6 months later, I became a celebrant.
So, see, when you do want to do something, you're pretty quick about it then.
Oh, yeah. Well, in my head, I was just like, this is what I want to do. This is like acting, but not acting, like not in a showy way. It's just kind of like my personality. It's just really me. And so I thought, well, why wouldn't I want to do that? And then it was just the idea that I would just do like three weddings a year just to kind of do something fun. And then now it's kind of become my primary income, because I've just loved it so much. I've been a celebrant now for, yeah, nearly 8 years. So, wow. Yeah, it's like the best thing that's ever happened to me, I think.
And one of the things that I've been so interested to spy on Instagram stories and even through your bio that you gave me is that your lack of sleep. I always thought that was because you were trying to get all your work done so that you could spend your day with your beautiful son. But is there more to it? Because I learned that you haven't slept much since you were 18.
Yeah, which is a very long time ago. yeah, a lot of people think that. They think that since I had my son 6 years ago, that he was kind of the catalyst to start that off. But actually, it wasn't. I've always, I mean, I say from the age of 18, but when I was speaking to my mum when I went home a couple of months ago, she said, no, you've pretty much been like that from a young age. Like, there's always been this excitement to be awake and to do things. And they're almost like sleeping is like a waste of my time. And, yeah. And yeah, like as a kid, like my brother and sister would take ages to get ready for school in the morning, but it was like 6 a.m. I was dressed downstairs, ready to go. Mum would be like, you're not leaving for school for at least another 2.5 hours. So just calm down. And then over the years, sort of as I went into my late teens, it started being sort of like at 2 a.m. and then between 2 a.m. and 3 a.m. And now anywhere between 2 and 4, I will just wake up and I'm good to go. Like there's no sort of wake up period. I don't have an alarm. There's nothing to snooze. I'm awake once I open my eyes and I'm done. And I tried to tackle this a couple of years ago. I decided that I wanted to go to sleep school and try and figure out exactly what was happening. So I joined this online sleep school, and this, I guess psychiatrist sort of like had some chats with me and tried to work out exactly why, you know, and he said, it's like being a baby when you teach a baby to get to resettle themselves. It's kind of like, I've lost that yeah. ability. Like I'll just get up and I just can't get myself back to sleep. And then I don't go to bed sometimes until like 10, 11 at night. And then so 4 hours I've worked out is the minimum that I need. Anything less than that, someone's going to get hurt.
But at least you need some sleep. That's good. Just you need a some bit, sleep. Just you a are bit. Human. You yeah. are human. That's good to know.
Just.
And And look, the middle of the night's pretty good too, because when it's quiet, all the creativity can flow. There's no one annoying you.
Exactly. And I'm very fortunate that my partner and my son both will sleep through anything. So I will get up and I will bake. I will have the mixer on. I can hoover. I can hoover right up to the bedroom doors upstairs, and they would not, they won't stir. So I'm very lucky in that sense that, you know, it's not a problem that I do that.
So I think it also gives you the time, because you've got, like I mentioned catering, I mentioned cakes, I mentioned emceeing and celebrancy, but you've also got the mini wedding kind of celebrity business. Like, you have so much going on. How do you approach it, and how do you make sure that you keep that energy and enthusiasm going with all of the aspects of the business and juggling all of that, like, without losing your mind?
I'll be honest, I have a CRM that does a lot of helps.
What's your CRM called? What's the brand?
I've got 17 hats. And 17 hats came into my life probably about, I think about 4 years ago now. Because what I found was, obviously, when I'm up so early, I'll prep a load of emails. And what I used to do is just put them in drafts. And then I'd have to go back at like 8 a.m. and then go through.
So it doesn't look really ridiculous that you're emailing in the middle of the night. Yeah.
Also, you've got to set those boundaries. You know, you don't want people to think, oh, yeah, she's up, she's got this, you know. So, yeah, so 17 hats came into my life. And then I realized that I could do all of my work at 2-3. Not that I always do work at that time, but I could do it. And then I just schedule everything to go out. So now, like, I've got emails. I've got couples that I'm marrying in November next year. And all of the emails that are to do with their ceremony are all scheduled, ready to go out, like, throughout the whole year next year. So
you batch really. Yes, like, just, yes. Yeah, batching is underloved in business, I think. The love of a good batch.
When I see some of the celebrants, and I sort of say to them, like, what are you doing? Why are you doing all this stuff? Just, you know, you got to have a workflow. And for me, I'm all about processes. So I used to be a HR manager, and people often say, so, how did you fall into that? It's so not what you would normally do. But for me, being a HR manager is learning about processes and having, you know, systems in place. And that kind of thing gets me very excited.
Oh.
You know, when it comes to things, look, don't even get me started about Excel. Oh my goodness. Oh. Like, give me a macro and a.
Give me an automation. I'm happy. Where's your happy place? In automation land.
So it's kind of like, for me, having all these bits of the jigsaw come together just from my organization skills, and also being able to sort of look at something and go, yeah, this is what needs to happen, a process. And on 17 Hats, you have a thing called a workflow. And so you can say on that, okay, once you've joined a couple up, then make me tick a box to say that I've sent them their contract.
Yeah.
Make me tick a box to say that I've done this.
Tell me what to do.
And then it's once you've set that up back of house, then you're good to go. Like, you're ready. And, oh, you can hear the excitement in my voice. I'm like, oh, my God.
I know. I've got to be careful, because I could talk about automation and systems all day long. And I'm like, no, we have other things to cover. They do float my boat completely. So is
we'll
that
like
what's
one.
Yeah, one on the complete automation. Let's meet again. Let us know if you want that episode, because we'll make it happen. Is it then your passion for what you're doing that stops you from being burnt out when you are so busy?
Yeah. I mean, part of that sort of, again, looking at systems and to-do lists and things like that, is that I will always have a couple of days in a month where I go 100%, I am not doing anything. And awesome. I have just days of sitting. And we literally in our house call them my burnout days. And they're just days where I will get in the bedroom, I'll get into bed, electric blanket on, and I will just binge watch movies that I've watched a million times before, movies that I don't need to focus on, that I don't need to think. And just, like, you know, Beverly Hills Cop 2, I've probably watched that movie this year alone like 150 times, just because it's something that I can switch off and laugh in the right places. So you've got to be able to allow for those burnout times in order to allow your passion to push you through on all the other days.
Yeah. I think that's really important. So you were one of the very first cake designers to bring back the retro ice cake. I presume in some ways that was probably influenced by your background in icing and your understanding of it. But nowadays, like, they're everywhere. And I remember you were one of the very first people that did them. And I know that you've commented on, I'm trying to put this really politely, other people using your images without crediting you, using your designs without crediting you, etc. How do you manage that in an industry that is essentially driven by copying because everyone is so trend-based? So I feel like that's a really sticky subject in business world.
It totally is. And to be honest, like, I remember, like, back at the beginning when I first started doing it now, like, as you said, this is in me. Like, my mum showed me this and she was taught to do this and I've watched her. And for me, when I first started doing it, it was, I saw her doing it and I wanted to do it years ago because there's this wonderful baker in the UK that has been doing these cakes forever. And she started bringing back retro cakes like a long time ago. I remember looking and thinking, wow. And my mum was like, oh, they're never going to come back. Like, that style is not coming back. It's silly. And I was like, okay, I'll just leave it alone. And then, a few years ago, I was like, oh, actually, I want to do it. I just want to have a go and see what it's like. Now, the only way I can keep moving forward, and yes, the Instagram, the social media is now flooded with these vintage cakes. And the only sort of, I guess, how can I say it again without being rude, but the kind of hold I have on that is going, oh, yeah, you guys can do that style, but look what I can do with this because I've got the knowledge and the skill to take it that one step further. So all of the piping tips, for example, the smaller they are is the more skill you need to have in working with them. And so a lot of the other cakes that are out on the social media use these larger tips. And I can sit and look at a cake and I can tell you exactly what tip they've used. And I can go, that's one of the easier ones. But then my cakes now, for me, it's just, I have to just keep evolving. I have to keep taking it to the next step. I don't follow many cake accounts on social media. I don't take my inspiration from other people. I just kind of literally look at a cake and go, think of the people that I'm making it for and go, oh yeah, you want a bit of this. You deserve a bit of that. You look like that. You can have that. And then I just pipe and stop when I feel like piping. I don't sketch. I don't design. It just has to come from within. And that's the only thing that I can sort of hold on to is go, the creativity is in me. The skill is in me and I'm not looking to anybody else for that inspiration. So they're going to have to get it from me if they want it.
And is that what helps you continue to evolve, that just continuing to come back to yourself and reminding yourself and that self, I suppose it's self-talk, which sounds sort of a bit, you know, cheesy and whatever, but it is in the end, self-talk of just coming back to yourself.
Absolutely. And that's with everything. I was talking to my sister the other day and, you know, we were just saying, you know, there's a lot of things that people, especially businesses, and it is coming from social media, where people just go, oh, I like that. Oh, I can easily copy that. But then you've always got to be like, well, that's okay, because I can just take it to the next step and you're not even ready for that because, you know, you've got to watch what I'm doing. So that is, that's the only way that I'm driven, is just by going, oh, yeah, cool, do what you want, but I'll just do something else next week instead. Yeah.
Yep. And I feel like that's so reflective of your business because it is just so colourful and joyous and happy, but it's got that beautiful balance with this is what is right in the world and this is what I value and, you know, that integrity around that. So how did you manage to find your feet with that in the first place and stay so strong with this is who I am, I don't care what is trending and what is cool and all that kind of stuff, and this is just me and that's enough? Because I feel like that's where most vendors are getting stuck right now. It's that really easy to change your branding because everyone else is changing your branding or whatever it is.
I think, and you've got to be true to yourself. You've got to know yourself. And that's something that, you know, my mum will tell you the same. She'll always be like, Z, or as she's, my full name is actually Zalika, but no one ever calls me that, not even my mum. So she'll go, she's like, well, she calls me Lika, and she'll be like, Lika's just her own person. Like, you know, there's no, and I've always known from a young age, like, I can only be me. I can't be anybody else. And so this is why I'm not easily influenced by what's happening, with anyone else, because I just kind of think, well, you can only be you. And the only thing that it took me a while to learn was going on social media and being yourself you need to be confident about that and you need to stand up for yourself, because every now and again, I'll post something on Instagram which will make somebody, like one person in how many millions in the world, billions in the world, and one person will be offended and one person might decide to DM me and, you know, share with me their disappointment in whatever that I've shared. And I just kind of go, okay, yeah, great. Good. Sure. That's all right. See ya. Because I just kind of think, well, this is my space. It's my space. It's my safe space. It's a space that I've created that hopefully anybody else that comes into feels safe and can also look and go, oh, yeah, wow, okay, she's a real person. Because at the end of the day, even though I'm a business, I'm still Z Scott. I'm still this one person doing these things, and I'm allowed to have character and personality. And I always say it's not just a cake page. Some people like message me and say, oh, can you stop posting things other than cakes? And I'm like, I could, but I won't, because it's also my page.
That confidence in that, I feel like, is really difficult, because it can be easy to say, well, be yourself, etc., but continuing to do that when it's not necessarily the thing that people are applauding or loving is really hard.
But then you've got to go, but some people obviously are loving it, because no matter how many followers you have, like those followers that are there are That's loving true. What you do. And yes. So why are you bothered, or why is anyone bothered about that one person who's unfollowed you, or the one person that's contacted you and said, I didn't like you sharing that? Well, okay, you're gone. Okay, well, nice to know you. But it's, and that's not in an arrogant kind of disrespectful way. That's just like, okay, if I go into a certain shop, I don't know, and I don't like the vibe in there, and I kind of go, oh, this isn't for me, and I walk out. I'm not going to go up to the sales assistant in there or the staff in there and say, hey, I didn't like this shop, just so you know.
This is a very good point. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Never thought of that synergy in. No. And yet we're also eager to tell everyone on social media when we're not happy with someone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I don't mean to be disrespectful, but I'm sorry that you feel that way, but I'm not sorry in a kind of, oh my goodness, I'm so, I'm just sorry in a kind of, okay, I appreciate your feedback, but yeah, it's my space. And so I'm not going to stop sharing what I want to share, just because you don't like it. Yeah.
And I feel like this is part of the conversation that is never talked about, but one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you about being a BIPOC woman in the Australian wedding industry is, when Black Lives Matters came out and everyone was posting their Black Lives Squares, you posted a video and it talked about your experience with some being in a shop, and someone was very, I suppose, you were talking about the difference between not being racist and being anti-racist. And it really crystallized everything around that for me. Like, of course I wasn't racist, of course, blah, 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 but I wasn't at that point personally doing anything that was anti-racist and actively making those decisions. So I wanted to dive into that with you, because you have been such an advocate for not just BIPOC inclusivity, but all kinds of inclusivity, because we know it's just never about one segment of the audience and the marketing and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So how does your life unfold as a BIPOC woman in the Australian wedding industry? Is there anything that affects you day to day with that? Is there a struggle around that for you?
I guess it's twofold. Yes, if I let it, and no, if I don't. I often sometimes think, oh, you know, way before when I first started promoting like the cakes and everything like that, I'll be honest and say, I think there were a couple of times where people were a little bit, I guess, shocked is the word, when I'd turn up and deliver their cake or whatever. And they'd kind of be like, you could tell there was a kind of like, oh, I didn't realize you were black. And I think because I hate talking on the phone. That's just, I'm just not a big phone talker. And so, but even when I do talk on the phone, people see, they go, oh, you're British. Oh, okay. You must be white. And then when they meet me, it's kind of like, oh, did not expect that. So I guess sometimes, back in the beginning, I'd be like sending things out or whatever, and if someone kind of declined something or said no, I did kind of have a moment where I was like, oh, is that because, And then I didn't really have loads of pictures on my website of me, because I had separate website back then, one with just my cakes and catering, and then another one for my celebrant business. Plus my celebrant name was, it is, still is, the British Celebrant, which kind of throws people even more. And then after a while, I started becoming more confident and more, I don't know, I just kind of went, oh, actually, let's just merge these things. Let's show my face. People have to know who I am, because I'm proud of my business. I'm proud of who I am. And this needs to be shared. Mm-hmm. And so I started, yeah, I just put everything in one. Started putting my face on everything, putting my face on Instagram, putting my face on my website, putting my face on, you know, my business cards, everything that went out said, this is me and I'm here, I'm in your face, and that's it. And I'll be honest, over the last sort of 3 to 4 years, I can't say that I've felt any resistance or within the industry and being booked as either a caker or a celebrant. And like I said, you know, I don't know, because maybe people just don't get in contact with me because I'm black, and that's okay. But generally my businesses are pretty successful, and you know, no one has ever outright come and said, blah, blah, blah.
Well, that's good. There's one plus.
But yes, I still get that in the shops and stuff. I still get that weird feeling out and about in within Australia for sure. There's been a big boost in couples of colour being shown on people's websites and things like that. And I, as you said, I think that's the same with all minorities or sections. You know, I feel so, super proud that everyone is starting to go, no, it's okay. We can have inclusivity. We can have everyone on our website without feeling like, if I put that on my first page, is that going to offend anyone? And I think that was what a lot of people thought back in the day, was if I have somebody of color on the first page of my website, does that then put other people off? And even in like the world, as you know, Australia as a whole, the amount of like big businesses that are starting to now have like big advertising campaigns with people of color as their primary picture, you're seeing it improve it, you know, it's getting better every time. Like even the other day, like I think it was one of the big name stores had an advert on the telly, and like every other shot was either a person of color, and then it went back, and then it had somebody else, and there was somebody else came in with a wheelchair, and then it was like, and I was like, why, you know, this should not offend anyone.
You'd hope it's
everyday life, you know.
Yes.
But then you think back to a couple of years back when a UK store did a big Christmas campaign with a family of color, and they received more complaints than I think it was something absolutely terrible that happened, and they received more complaints than they received about news footage coverage about this thing that happened. And just people going, I don't relate to this. Why is it on my telly? And it was just a family enjoying a Christmas Day lunch. But because it was a black family, there were all these complaints that came in. And wow. I just kind of went, oh, okay. So we're still there. Okay.
Yeah. You're still, you get that reminder every now and then, don't you? You think you've really moved forward. And so how do we then, as a wedding industry who in Australia is predominantly white, predominantly able, predominantly cis, make sure that what we're doing in our businesses is not just tokenistic and not just, oh, well, okay, we've got a black couple. We have to make sure we slap them up on our feed and then like kind of tick the box or whatever.
No, you got to back that up. You got to back it up. Don't just do over the past couple of years, a lot of people have sort of contacted me and said, oh, we're interested in doing a collaboration shoot. And, you know, we'd love to have you in, or we'd love to have people, do you know anybody that would be willing to be the bride and groom, or, you know, the brides or the parties, the marry? And I'm just like, okay, I appreciate that you're coming to me, but talk to me about what you're going to do with that afterwards. Is it just going to be, I just need a picture to put on my website? Mm-hmm. Or what are you doing? Are you updating hashtags? Are you promoting within, you know, the groups that need to see it? Mm-hmm. I don't think many people know that there are lots of groups that are predominantly, you know, we've got like – Jamaicans in Australia. We've got a group mm-hmm. that is just called that. And they're constantly coming to me and going, do you know anyone who we'd feel comfortable with to be a photographer for our wedding or do this, do that? And I'm like, once you say I'm open to that community, you've then got to back that up and get out there and say, yes, we're here. Can we help it? Can we help you? How can we help you? And it's more than like putting a rainbow flag on your website. Mm-hmm. You've also got to back that up again. Unfortunately, I did a wedding a few months ago where I had two lovely blokes getting married. They're happy for me to call them that. And they had this photographer there who then just kind of went on this whole, right, okay, so which one of you is like the bride?
Oh no.
And I was like, for real? And so obviously I got annoyed and I was very, I was very held back about it. I was very professional and I approached him about it and I just kind of went, hold on. And when I reviewed him afterwards, he had this big rainbow flag on his website and was totally like, yes, you know, all my partner. And I was like, yeah, you've promoted that, but you've not backed that up. You've turned up and then you've put in all these horrible things, made my couple feel uncomfortable. And then, you know, so that's what I mean by backing it up. Don't then turn up.
Do the work.
Do that, you know.
Yeah. Find out the language. Find out. Like, there's so many resources out there for the language, et cetera. Yeah. And, you know, the things you probably shouldn't be saying and all that kind of stuff. But it takes a lot of self-reflection, I think, as well, that a lot of people aren't prepared to do.
And also, like, you know, yeah, being able to review and accept. But I think a lot of people are doing it unfortunately, some people do it for the money. They just go, if we put this flag on, or if we say, we're, you know, put the acknowledgement of country at the bottom of the website, you know, that will mean that they'll book us, but we don't really have to do anything different. I can still be me. It's like, well, no, you need to back that up. Yeah.
And one of the feedback things I hear from voting vendors is, but of course I'd work with LGBTQI couples. Of course I'd work with BIPOC couples, but none of them approach me. None of them book me. And we talk a lot with that in Polka Dot Wedding about, okay, you've got to be showing couples on your website. You've got to be doing things like style shoots. You've got to be connecting with the communities, all that kind of stuff. What is your advice then to couples to vendors that are a bit like, well, they're not booking me, and how can I show diversity if they're not booking me?
Like you said, the main thing is connecting with the community. If you, like, use your social media, if it's a special day or if it's something, or you want, like you said, if you've done a collaboration shoot, share that, but also, you know, have the right wording, update your website, don't have mm-hmm. on there, oh, you know, bride and groom. I work with a few celebrants on their admin. That's just an extra thing I do.
Oh yeah, but some, where?
Of, them, but some of them in their terms and conditions, it will still say bride and groom or on their contact form, because people sometimes set and forget. And so, you know, have a little moment, go through all of your website, go in as a client or as a potential client, go through all your paperwork, go through your website and make sure that your wording and everything on your website and all your paperwork reflects who you want to attract and talk to them. Because there's no point saying, I'm open, like I said, and then on your contact form, it doesn't ask people what their pronouns are, for example, you know, then you're ready straight away. That person's going there and going, might say, I don't feel safe here because I've not been asked that. So how are you going to, how are you going to approach me or when you contact me?
Yeah.
How are you going to, you know, say hi, you know, things like that. Yeah. I think that's one of the main things is, you know, go through everything and make sure that you're all up to date and you're reflecting with that person. Acknowledgement of country, make sure it's correct wording. There's so many different options. And if you're not sure, communicate with somebody in that community and just sort of say, hey, I'm reaching out. But also don't then just go to the one, because I found
that
was
the one BIPOC person and be like, hey, speak for everyone. Speak for everyone right now. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and if you are going to go to them, you could happily say, is this something you do? can I pay you? Is it something you, of a service you might offer? We've got a wonderful mum at my son's school who is part of the Indigenous community. And she said to us, if you want help, I'm happy to help for the everyday stuff. And then I approached her for as a wedding vendor. And I said, but can I pay you to just help me out step by step? I want to know, is there a specific, you know, all the different, go through the map with me. I want to make sure that when I do an acknowledgement of country, that I'm not just doing a blanket, this is for all of Australia. Can you go through with me? And she was like, yeah, that's fine. You just let me know what you need. And, you know, and so I've paid her to give me this wonderful in-depth, you know, I'm using her knowledge, but I'm not just using her.
Which is a big problem as well. Even, I suppose it's not just with people in communities that are underrepresented. It's with every creative conversation. Yeah. Oh, can I just shout you a coffee and you tell me everything?
No, because this knowledge is more than a coffee. I tell you what, you're going to have to pay me a bit more than $4.20 for a long black. Do you know what I mean?
And the BIPOC community in particular has done a heck of a lot of unpaid labor in the past since Black Lives Matters, in the whole Black Squares.
Educating, I can't even tell you how many emails I've received, especially during that time where people were just like, he's, you know, I laugh about it with my partner, but just sort of going, oh, let me just reach out to that one person.
See,
I know.
Not me, not me. I'm not racist. not the royal me. I'll email you today because I promise I'm not like them.
Just because I know you're so open, Z. Like one person said, you're just so open and you're happy to share. And I'm like, I get that. But, you know.
Exhausting, is it? It must be exhausting.
Oh, gosh, it is. And I just kind of think, again, it's one of those things where you go, oh, I bet you if I put on a session or something and said to people, pay $15 each and come and, you know, learn about all of this. They won't turn up. Of course they won't, because then they've got to pay for it and they've got to, you know, where I just think, like you said, it's like, oh, Zia, you around for a coffee? And then it's like, oh, drink mid-coffee. Can I just ask you a couple of questions? Oh, okay.
And I think we as, if you're not in those minority communities, so if you are able versus disabled or whatever it is, you have to be prepared to, A, pay up the people who are educating and put the time and work in rather than just, can you just tell me via email and then I've done my work.
Copy and paste,
I've tried. I've done my work. I've asked Z for a coffee. What do you want more? There's a lot of work to be done in that, I think, and it's ongoing forever. So
yes, that's the thing. That's what I keep saying to people as well. It's not something that's going to be sorted overnight. We've seen, unfortunately, things happen in the news this week that it's not over. It's not. And it's not, it, you know, it, as much as we're trying to teach at this level, when I say this level, I mean us adults, we then got to then look to the future and look to the ones that are upcoming. What these kids see is what they're, you know, they're sucking that in. And we've just got to be better people. We've just got to be better people. And we've just got to, oh, look, I'm just getting emotional about it, but I'm just like, you know, we cannot just go, oh yeah, they're okay. That, you know, they're getting what they need. They're not. They're still seeing things, and we just need to, I don't know how it happens. I don't have the answer myself, but all I know is that I'm doing my best as a person to be a better person for my six-year-old looks to me and to my partner and goes, okay, that's wrong. Mum and dad are upset about that. That's obviously wrong. And then I speak to him and I'll tell him, I obviously won't tell him details, but I will share with him and say, look, this is something that we need to be aware of. You know, my child is a mixed race Australian. And, you know, I've got to say to him, there's some things that you will do in life that your friend will get away with, but you won't. Yeah. And, you know, it's hard and it's a hard conversation. But as adults and as parents and you know, anybody who is a guardian of a child, you know, that's your job. As far as I'm concerned, that is your job to make that future better, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's our job in the wedding industry to make it better. So what other things would you say that the wedding industry could do to better themselves in inclusivity and inclusion and diversity and all that kind of stuff?
Well, like I said, first things first, get on all your marketing community, your communications and everything, and make sure that they're reflecting your views. And you know what? I mean that both ways. If you don't want to work with people, be big and say you don't want to. Yeah. Like, you know, own it.
Yes. Yep.
Don't waste my time. Don't waste anybody's time. But, and don't, you know, don't make money from anybody that you don't want to make money from, would be my first thing. So educate yourself. And like you said, the collaborations are great. And I think whether you're doing a wedding that just has people from different communities in the collaboration team, or that you want that to be viewed, it's up to you. It's up to you what you're trying to communicate with that collaboration. But collaboration is really important. And backing that up then as well, and just making sure that you, whatever you want to, whatever sort of message you want to send out there, that you're then making sure you're revisiting that all the time.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't want you to feel like we've made you the spokesperson for every BIPOC in the wedding industry as well at all. So we need to come back to something fun and something. So tell me your automation queen, as a fellow automation adorer, tell me your favorite tech apart from 17 hats. Because I want to end on something light, because I feel like you've given it so many good nuggets.
I don't know now. Like, oh my gosh, there's so many things. 17 hats is kind of the only thing I use.
Oh, well, so 17 hats is the golden one. I feel like that's a pretty good recommendation, though.
For me, it is. And I think, that obviously there are lots of other options that people can go with. I know there are lots of others, but I found 17 hats as the most usable platform for me.
Yeah.
Easy to work with, easy to input. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work when you first start out.
As everything is with automation.
Exactly. You've got to put in the time and get that back of house sorted. Again, bringing it back to my favorite, my top one, Excel. Yeah. Once you've put in all the, you know, everything in like a spreadsheet, and you can go in one day and just go, I'm just going to put a number in here. And then the whole spreadsheet just goes and everything just pops up. Then it's like, yay.
Look, we have to talk about Zapier. Let's not even go about Zapier and the automation that comes with Zapier. We might be here all day. So what is next for you? Like in your list of 6 businesses and 7 projects and amazing amount of things, what is next? What is 2023 hold?
Oh my goodness, you're going to laugh here, because I am putting another everything business back.
Oh no. No,
that's, I'm going good. The other way.
That's good. So less catering. What else are you pulling back?
Well, not necessarily pulling everything back, but I'm focusing a lot more on sort of, like I mentioned before, like when I work with a lot of new celebrants and teaching and stuff, I feel like there's so much within me that I can give, that I'll be doing. There's lots of tutorials and things about to happen.
Because you do piping classes as well, which isn't celebrant related, but Kate related.
Yes, exactly. So because I've got now the wonderful Z Scott HQ, it's a great space for me. It's like my studio, it's my office, it's a workshop space, it's a mini wedding space. It's like everything that I wanted in one room. And I feel like I'm getting a bit old now, and I just want to do as much as I can in one space and not travel all around Victoria.
Yeah. And you can get, so you have a co-working office with a bunch of other Melbourne wedding vendors, don't you?
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah. So it's, it's one big building, and we've all got our own rooms, but yeah, it's wonderful. We're all very different, but very much the same. We're all quite vibrant. It can get nice. It's lots of fun. And we all just really, we're all women, we're all mums, and we all support each other. And it's a really nice, I've been there now for like 4 to 5 months. And it's just a wonderful space to be able to go. I always thought I'd always work from home no matter what. And then this opportunity came up, and I was like, wow, yeah, this is good. It's nice to have a space where you walk in, and it's colourful. It's really colourful as well. And so you walk in and you're like, oh, yeah, I'm ready. And I'm so much more productive when I'm there than when I'm at home.
Do you think the difference between work and life, home and work, kind of mattered in that sense?
Yeah, and I think that's, again, goes back to why I've dropped the catering. It's because, you know, my home kitchen is my registered food kitchen. So I'd get up and I'd go straight into the kitchen and I'd get everything done. And then I'd go and sit in my office, which was still within my house.
So you never got away from it.
No. And then I'd go and prep dinner, and then I'd be back in the kitchen and I'm prepping dinner and I'm making, everything like that. So yeah, now that I'm not doing the catering, the cakes are, you know, to me are easy. I know they don't look easy to a lot of people, but for me, I just do my cakes, here, then I put them in the fridge, and then I go to the studio and I do whatever I need to do there. And then I come home and I'm then ready to cook dinner for me and my family, and do that with love and enjoyment, as opposed to, oh, do we have to eat tonight?
Because I've been in the kitchen all day anyway. So that must help your boundaries. It must be amazing for your boundaries then as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, like I said, when I get up at 2 a.m., I don't always go straight into work. Sometimes I get up and clean. Sometimes, you know, people also forget that my family live the other side of the world. So I jump on the phone with my sister or my mum or, you know, my dad, and we have, like, phone chats at, like, you know, when it's, like, 3 o'clock in the morning here. So, you know, that it's not always work when I first get up.
It's just life and things to do. Yeah. Well, it's been the most wonderful 45 minutes, and thank you for sharing so much of your knowledge and so much of your experience and business with me. It's been such a treat.
Thank you for having me. I go off on tangents a lot, so I hope you...
I love a tangent. I love a tangent. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I am so thrilled that we got to kick off 2023 with Zee, because I have been looking forward to this chat for the longest time. You can find out more about our interview over on polkadotwedding.com/podcast or weddingpodcast.com.au. I have put a full transcript over there, written and included all Zee's links, including her links to her Polkadot Wedding profile. If you're a wedding vendor, we would love to have you as a part of Polkadot Wedding. We're not invitation only. We welcome everyone and anyone, because we believe that we want couples to find vendors that suit them and not us. We have so much in store for our vendors. We drop into your inbox weekly with business tips and tricks. We feature you across the site in multiple different ways. We stalk you. We review you. We do everything we can to make sure your business is marketed through Polkadot Wedding beautifully. We can't wait to meet you. We would love to have a chat. So drop us an email or send us a message, because we would love to get to know you. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode from season 2.